My first encounter with the girl with the phantom rose was nothing if not curious. As one who grew up encouraged fiercely to live a blissfully uneventful life and to die in a comfortable state of obliqueness, my chance encounter with one so strange was, without a doubt, the most striking event I would ever experience. And so it was that the day I met the girl with the phantom rose, a new chapter of my life was written by her hand, and my heart was inexplicably stolen by someone I would never truly know. The mysterious girl who walked the moors with a handful of splendour, a curiosity in three parts. The first part came when I first stumbled upon her, a spectre walking the moors of my childhood with all the interest of a coroner dealing with a death by old age, while attempting to not appear as if I was following her, which was precisely what I was doing. There were numerous curiosities in her appearance that day that would have inspired a desire to know more in even the most disinterested of folk. The first was the fact that she had chosen to walk said moors, currently in the grip of a vile and most tempestuous winter, in nothing but a small dress and shawl. The second was the fact that said vile and cruel winter, though ravaging me and causing me no end of discomfort and abuse, seemed to ignore her entirely, as if the air around her belonged not in the same realm as that around me, but another plane entirely in which she alone resided. The third, and potentially most interesting, was that she appeared to be not wearing shoes. Now, far be it from me to completely ignore the potential for moor-dwelling shoe thieves, I did decide, despite my hesitance to inject the strange into my comfortably grey life, to follow her. Perhaps to offer warmth and salvation, despite the apparent eagerness she displayed to walk in any direction but one which might lead to warmth and a respite from the wind. Or mayhap simply to inquire as to her purpose there that day. The spectral figure off in the distance was all the marker I needed to continue my pursuit, but the small footprints she left in her passing were an easily followed trail, each one preserved in the cold, hoar-frost-coated earth, as if even the very landscape in which she walked seemed eager to maintain proof of her presence there. I fear I may never have caught her that day, for despite the sturdy boots on my feet shielding me from the quagmire underfoot, she seemed to glide gracefully and effortlessly along the muddy earth at the same pace that I trudged through it, were it not for her frequent and unerring stops. Each time her pace would slow to a stop, I froze on the spot, worried that she had detected my presence and might see terror in me. And each time she did stop, I was forced to contemplate the fact that she was no longer walking aimlessly or without direction, and that she might simply be walking away from me. But I'd soon learned that the reasons for her stopping did not concern me in the slightest. When I eventually came into hailing distance, I called out to her, a simple greeting, and one which she deigned to ignore. Resolute, I continued on, finally closing the distance until I was able to approach her, noting the distinct lack of mud or dampness on her dress, and indeed the distinct lack of shoes adorning her feet. Her hair seemed to flow and dance in its own personal breeze, and her breath left no warm plumes in the air like mine. She stood stock still, ignoring all questions from my lips as to her current state of not being freezing and lost, simply turning her head side to side slowly, regarding the ground around her feet. I round her, so as to see her face better, and am met by a pair of piercing bright eyes and an emotionless, pale face, which were to me as ghost-like as any work of fiction. I reach out to her, as if to break the trance I was almost sure she was under, but resisted, worried for some reason that perhaps days in this wasteland had rendered my own mind broken, and that contact with her pale, smooth skin might shatter the illusion. It was then that I noticed her hands, clutched tight against her chest. At first I thought this might be one sign that perhaps she wasn't as impervious to the cold as I first thought, that perhaps this near-naked girl walking a not-so-somewhat inhospitable place might indeed be human. Until the seemingly impenetrable cage of her hands let slip a tiny sliver of brightest red. Before my engorged curiosity might have inquired as to what she held, she set off again, seemingly lost to all but the thoughts in her head, if she indeed had any at all. She, and I suppose I, walked for what seemed like hours, although the sun seemed to hang curiously unmoving in the sky, as if unwilling to deny the mysterious girl its light. On and on we walked, and still she would occasionally stop and look around and before continuing on, as if her examination of this particular area failed to meet some unknown criteria, just like the rest. It was, I'll admit, with no small manner of relief that she finally smiled curtly as she regarded one particular spot of earth, the centre of a vast expanse of nothing but grass and mud. With tentative steps, she circled a spot, an uncovered patch of mud that was untouched by feet or stone, and sat by it, seemingly as unaffected by the cold around her legs and behind as she was with her feet. Feeling somewhat committed to the task, be it madness or determination, I chose to sit opposite her, regarding her with a tired but alarmingly intrigued expression, and one which she continued to ignore entirely. With an outstretched finger, she drew a circle in the patch of mud, careful to maintain whatever treasure she holds so close within her remaining closed hand, and her smile widens. I inquire as to what she's doing, but she is deaf to all but the satisfaction her work seems to be bringing her. For minutes we sit there, together, me ensorcelled by the seemingly endless curiosities that have led me to this place, and that will continue to lead me there for many years to come, and her by the intense satisfaction of whatever it is she is doing here. Eventually, and with some noticeable hesitance, she moves her enclosed fist over the circle, her arm shaking faintly. Finally, she looks up, not at the sky or the hills or the grass that enclose us, but at me, and her eyes seem to grow brighter as they lock with my own, and in that moment I barely notice the way her wrist rotates slowly and her fist unclenches, pouring a torrent of bright red petals onto the earth below. At first, fears tear my eye away from hers, fear that something she had until recently held so tight and preciously to her breast might be lost in the breeze that circles us. But the petals, rather than becoming enthralled by the torrents of wind that would have so easily carried dust and snow, simply fall, almost lazily, to the earth that lies between me and her, and there they rest. Motionless and beautiful. And then she lied down, her body creating a mould in the mud, and with her head facing me, a wide smile playing across her face, she winks. A seemingly unremarkable act by an astonishingly remarkable and mysterious girl, a gesture so minor and yet something within my mind in a place that yearned for the remarkable, for the dangerous, for the unexplainable, a voice stirs and ponders that this is not the wink of the living, no, but perhaps it is the wink of something, someone, that might soon live, that might soon bloom, that might soon shed innocence and become something more. The second part came when I awoke there, in the same place, a mould lying in the mud next to me from where my body fell prey to the grasping tendrils of a sleep I could not remember succumbing to. The sun is low in the sky, the air is mercifully calm, and the girl is nowhere to be seen. I rise quickly, unexplainable worries a storm in my head, and look down at the spot where my conscious mind would scream pleadingly that a girl once lay. But no more. She is gone. No trace of her remaining in this place. No trace except a rose. a bright, majestic scarlet rose that stands upon a strong green stem, piercing the earth upon which the petals she clutched so tightly had fallen in a silent and wonderfully wild dance down to the earth to rest. A thousand questions scream hurricanes in my mind, but only one remains prominent in its desperate, fatal need to be answered. Where did she go? And more to the point, who was she? Had I known then that this question, along with a thousand others, would go unanswered for years to come and possibly beyond, perhaps an unyielding madness would have claimed me then and there, amongst the mud and grass, by a rose I could only consider as belonging to her. For a while, there was nothing to do but sit and wait. Perhaps she would return. Perhaps she would simply materialize out of the thin, cold air that seemed to suffocate me in my despair like a shroud. Perhaps she would simply and suddenly not be gone. Until then, there was nothing to do but wait and look into the almost transparent petals that made up the head of the rose, the petals that seemed to drink sunlight and burn bright with it. The third and tragically final part of the curiosity of the girl with the phantom rose occurred many years after my initial encounter with her. For many years that I walked those same fields, those same familiar valleys, not in the hopes of relaxation and the comfortable familiarity of youth and tradition and home, but in the hopes that she would return, that I might spy a young, beautiful, ghost-like woman walking elegantly on naked feet through the sucking, grasping mud, and that this time we might talk. Perhaps this time she might look at me with those bright, alluring eyes, and in me perhaps she might see something that would wash away the disinterested, distant manner in which she seemed to view the world. Sadly, I never saw her again, nor would I ever. The moors and plains were devoid of all but green and white and a crushing emptiness the likes of which I never thought I would relate to a place I once loved. Only the rose remained, planted in the same spot she chose, standing strong and resolute against the tireless onslaught of the wind that I'd soon come to ignore, all thoughts of the cold lost amongst memories and dreams of simply sharing the view with her again. The rose was the last sign of her presence here, and just as it did her, so it did tether me to this place. One final and stoic trace of beauty in a world of grey rain and spectral skies. But though the tendrils of defeat and loss did indeed worm their ways into the deepest recesses of my heart, it never failed to cling desperately and longingly to the memory of that day I spent following in her footstep-riddled wake. With each passing year, I took another pilgrimage along the same route she walked tirelessly, ending at a rose that seemed to me as much a waypost as it did a grave. Whether it was her that was buried here or my heart, I could never quite decide. Then came the fair. Towering tents and a cacophony of talk and laughter and music filled a once empty and desolate landscape with joy and colour, and a life I hadn't felt there since meeting the girl with the phantom rose. At first sight of the tents and entertainers and wooden fence that encircled the ground filled my heart with a chilling, almost crippling dread, as if my entire body was suddenly in the darkest and coldest of seas. The fairground was vast and chaotic in its layout, and in the maddening despair of the moment there was nothing in my mind but a fatal certainty of the delicate flower's destruction underfoot of those who knew not what it meant. Tears threatened to fall carelessly from my eyes, and my fingers shivered in a non-existent cold. And then I saw her. Facing away from me, stood by a stall holding a vast array of flowers, was a girl whose long, wild, and alluring hair I could never hope to forget. My body grows still, unmoving, statuesque in this moment, as hours of thinking what I might do should I see her again, if this were true to be her, are thrown haphazard and instantaneously into the back of my mind, and I stand and simply stare, silently screaming for her to turn around. Before I can muster any form of control over my own body, I feel myself walk slowly and carefully towards her, as if stepping wrong, as if breathing, as if muttering one incorrect and unforgivable syllable might cause the surrounding dreamscape to collapse to glass-like shards around my feet and leave me tired and cold and alone in a world I no longer believed I could suffer. The gentle scent of flowers drifts on the calm breeze, and my arm lifts, my fingers outstretched, and I place my hand gently on her shoulder, and she turns. She may not be the same girl, though she bears the same hair, and the same eyes, and the same wry, undecipherable smile, but my heart is still, and in a way, content. She tilts her head to the side and regards me with a curiosity that is to me as ironic as it is intoxicating. And I breathe, as if for the first time, and smile back. The rose she clutches to her chest, a rose of unequivalent beauty and splendor, is all I need. And in truth, everything I have ever wanted, and everything I have ever loved.